Chapter 10. Neither do their leaders agree either in the time of it, or in the particulars of the fact, that is to say, in whose reign, or under what government all this happened, in what year, and the like. So I satisfy myself with transcribing the matter of fact, and then leave it as I find it. In this vast tract of meadows are fed a prodigious number of black cattle which are said to be fed up for the fattest beef, though not the largest in England, and the quantity is so great, as that they, not only supply the city of Norwich, the town of Yarmouth, and county adjacent, but send great quantities of them weekly in all the winter season to London. And this in particular is worthy remark, that the gross of all the Scots cattle which come yearly into England are brought hither, being brought to a small village lying north of the city of Norwich, called St. Faith's, where the Norfolk graziers go and buy them. These Scots runts, so they call them, coming out of the cold and barren mountains of the Highlands in Scotland, feed so eagerly on the rich pasture in these marshes, that they thrive in an unusual manner, and grow monstrously fat, and the beef is so delicious for taste, that the inhabitants prefer them to the English cattle, which are much larger and fairer to look at, and they may very well do so. Some have told me, and I believe with good judgment, that there are above 40,000 of these Scots cattle fed in this county every year, and most of them in the said marshes between Norwich, Beccles, and Yarmouth. Yarmouth is an ancient town, much older than Norwich, and at present, though not standing on so much ground, yet better built, much more complete, for number of inhabitants, not much inferior, and for wealth, trade, and advantage of its situation, infinitely superior to Norwich. It is placed on a peninsula between the river Yare and the sea, the two last lying parallel to one another, and the town in the middle. The river lies on the west side of the town, and being grown very large and deep, by a conflux of all the rivers on this side the county, forms the haven, and the town facing to the west also, and open to the river, makes the finest quay in England, if not in Europe, not inferior even to that of Marseille itself. The ships ride here so close, and, as it were, keeping up one another, with their headfasts on shore, that for half a mile together they go across the stream with their bows spritz over the land, their bows, or heads touching the very wharf, so that one may walk from ship to ship, as on a floating bridge, all along by the shore side. The quay reaching from the drawbridge almost to the south gate, is so spacious and wide, that in some places it is near 100 yards from the houses to the wharf. In this pleasant and agreeable range of houses are some very magnificent buildings, and among the rest, the custom house and town hall, and some merchants' houses, which look like little palaces, rather than the dwelling houses of private men. The greatest defect of this beautiful town seems to be that, though it is very rich and increasing in wealth and trade, and consequently in people, there is not room to enlarge the town by building, which would be certainly done much more than it is, but that the river on the land side prescribes them, except at the north end without the gate, and even there the land is not very agreeable. But if they had a larger space within the gates there would before now have been many spacious streets of noble fine buildings erected, as we see, is done in some other thriving towns in England, as at Liverpool, Manchester, Bristol, Frome, etc. The quay and the harbour of this town during the fishing fair, as they call it, which is every Michaelmas, one sees the land covered with people, and the river with barks and boats, busy day and night landing and carrying of the herrings, which they catch here in such prodigious quantities, that it is incredible. I happened to be there during their fishing fair, when I told in one tide 110 barks and fishing vessels coming up the river all laden with herrings, and all taken the night before. And this was besides what was brought on shore on the Dean, that is the seaside of the town, by open boats, which they call cobles, and which often bring in two or three last of fish at a time. The barks often bring in 10 last a piece. This fishing fair begins on Michaelmas Day, and lasts all the month of October, by which time the herrings draw off to sea, shoot their spawn, and are no more fit for the merchant's business at least, not those that are taken thereabouts. The quantity of herrings that are caught in this season are diversely accounted for. Some have said that the towns of Yarmouth and Lowestoft only have taken 40,000 last in a season. I will not venture to confirm that report, but this I have heard the merchants themselves say, viz., that they have cured, that is to say, hanged and dried in the smoke 40,000 barrels of merchantable red herrings in one season, which is in itself, though far short of the other, yet a very considerable article. And it is to be added, that this is besides all the herrings consumed in the country towns of both those populous counties for 30 miles from the sea, whither very great quantities are carried every tide during the whole season. But this is only one branch of the great trade carried on in this town. Another part of this commerce is in the exporting these herrings, after they are cured. And for this their merchants have a great trade to Genoa, Leghorn, Naples, Messina, and Venice, as also to Spain and Portugal, also exporting with their herring very great quantities of worsted stuffs, and stuffs made of silk and worsted, camlets, etc. The manufactures of the neighboring city of Norwich, and of the places adjacent. Besides this, they carry on a very considerable trade with Holland, whose opposite neighbors they are, and a vast quantity of woolen manufactures they export to the Dutch every year. Also they have a fishing trade to the North Seas for white fish, which from the place, are called the North Sea cod. They have also a considerable trade to Norway, and to the Baltic, from whence they bring back deals and fir timber, oaken plank, box, spars, oars, pitch, tar, hemp, flax, spruce canvas, and sail cloth, with all manner of naval stores, which they generally have a consumption for in their own port, where they build a very great number of ships every year, besides refitting and repairing the old. Add to this the coal trade between Newcastle and the River of Thames, in which they are so improved of late years, that they have now a greater share of it than any other town in England, and have quite worked the Ipswich men out of it who had formerly the chief share of the colliery in their hands. For the carrying on all these trades they must have a very great number of ships, either of their own or employed by them. And it may in some measure be judged of by this that in the year 1697 I had an account from the town register, that there was then 1123 sail of ships using the sea and belonging to the town, besides such ships as the merchants of Yarmouth might be concerned in, and be part owners of, belonging to any other ports. To all this I must add, without compliment to the town, or to the people, that the merchants, and even the generality of traders of Yarmouth, have a very good reputation in trade as well abroad, as at home for men of fair and honorable dealing, punctual and just in their performing their engagements and in discharging commissions, and their seamen, as well masters as mariners, are justly esteemed among the ablest and most expert navigators in England. This town, however populous and large, was ever contained in one parish, and had but one church, but within these 2 years they have built another very fine church near the south end of the town. The old church is dedicated to Saint Nicholas, and was built by that famous bishop of Norwich, William Herbert, who flourished in the reign of William II and Henry I. William of Malmesbury calls him Verpecuniusus. He might have called him Verpecuniusissimus, considering the times he lived in, and the works of charity and munificence which he has left as witnesses of his immense riches, for he built the cathedral church, the priory for 60 monks, the bishop's palace, and the parish church of St. Leonard, all in Norwich, this great church at Yarmouth, the church of St. Margaret at Lynn, and of St. Mary at Elmham. He removed the episcopal see from Thetford to Norwich, and instituted the Cluniac monks at Thetford, and gave them, or built them a house. This old church is very large, and has a high spire, which is a useful sea mark. Here is one of the finest marketplaces, and the best served with provisions in England, London excepted. And the inhabitants are so multiplied in a few years, that they seem to want room in their town, rather than people to fill it, as I have observed above. The streets are all exactly straight from north to south, with lanes or alleys, which they call rows, crossing them in straight lines also from east to west, so that it is the most regular built town in England, and seems to have been built all at once, or that the dimensions of the houses and extent of the streets were laid out by consent. They have particular privileges in this town, and a jurisdiction by which they can try, condemn, and execute in especial cases without waiting for a warrant from above. And this they exerted once very smartly in executing a captain of one of the king's ships of war in the reign of King Charles II. For a murder committed in the street, the circumstance of which did indeed call for justice, but some thought they would not have ventured to exert their powers as they did. However, I never heard that the government resented it, or blamed them for it. It is also a very well-governed town, and I have nowhere in England observed the Sabbath day so exactly kept, or the breach so continually punished, as in this place, which I name to their honor. Among all these regularities it is no wonder, if we do not find abundance of reveling, or that there is little encouragement to assemblies, plays, and gaming meetings at Yarmouth as in some other places. And yet I do not see that the ladies here come behind any of the neighboring counties, either in beauty, breeding, or behavior, to which may be added to, not at all to their disadvantage, that they generally go beyond them in fortunes. From Yarmouth I resolved to pursue my first design, viz. To view the seaside on this coast, which is particularly famous for being one of the most dangerous, and most fatal to the sailors in all England, I may say in all Britain, and the more so, because of the great number of ships which are continually going and coming this way in their passage between London, and all the northern coasts of Great Britain. Matters of antiquity are not my inquiry, but principally observations on the present state of things, and, if possible, to give such accounts of things worthy of recording as have never been observed before, and this leads me the more directly to mention the commerce and the navigation, when I come to towns upon the coast as what few writers have yet meddled with. The reason of the dangers of this particular coast are found in the situation of the county, and in the course of ships sailing this way, which I shall describe as well as I can thus. The shore from the mouth of the River of Thames to Yarmouth Roads lies in a straight line from SSE to NNW, the land being on the W or larboard side. From Winterton-ness, which is the utmost northerly point of land in the county of Norfolk, and about 4 miles beyond Yarmouth, the shore falls off for nearly 60 miles to the west, as far as Lynn and Boston, till the shore of Lincolnshire tends north again for about 60 miles more as far as the Humber, whence the coast of Yorkshire, or Holderness, which is the East Riding, shoots out again into the sea, to the Spurn, and to Flamborough Head, as far east, almost, as the shore of Norfolk had given back at Winterton, making a very deep gulf or bay between those two points of Winterton and the Spurn Head, so that the ships going north are obliged to stretch away to sea from Winterton-ness, and leaving the sight of land in that deep bay which I have mentioned, that reaches to Lynn and the shore of Lincolnshire, they go, I say, N or still NNW, to meet the shore of Holderness, which I said runs out into the sea again at the Spurn, and the first land they make, or desire to make, is called as above, Flamborough Head, so that Winterton-ness and Flamborough Head are the two extremes of this course. There is, as I said, the Spurn Head indeed between, but as it lies too far in towards the Humber, they keep out to the north, to avoid coming near it. In like manner the ships which come from the north, leave the shore at Flamborough Head, and stretch away SSE for Yarmouth Roads, and the first land they make is Winterton-ness as above. Now, the danger of the place is this. If the ships coming from the north are taken with a hard gale of wind from the SE, or from any point between northeast and SE, so that they cannot, as the seamen call it, weather winterthanness. They are thereby kept within that deep bay, and if the wind blows hard, are often in danger of running on shore upon the rocks about Cromer, on the north coast of Norfolk, or stranding upon the flat shore between Cromer and Wells. All the relief they have is good ground tackle to ride it out, which is very hard to do there, the sea coming very high upon them, or if they cannot ride it out then, to run into the bottom of the great bay I mentioned, to Lynn or Boston, which is a very difficult and desperate push. So that sometimes in this distress whole fleets have been lost here altogether. The like is the danger to ships going northward, if after passing by Winterton they are taken short with a northeast wind, and cannot put back into the roads, which very often happens, then they are driven upon the same coast, and embayed just as the latter. The danger on the north part of this bay is not the same, because if ships going or coming should be taken short on this side Flamborough, there is the river Humber open to them, and several good roads to have recourse to, as Burlington Bay, Grimsby Road, and the Spurn Head, and others, where they ride under shelter. The dangers of this place being thus considered, it is no wonder that upon the shore beyond Yarmouth there are no less than 4 lighthouses kept flaming every night, besides the lights at Castor, north of the town, and at Gulstoness, all of which are to direct the sailors, to keep a good offing in case of bad weather, and to prevent their running into Cromer Bay, which the seamen call the Devil's Throat. As I went by land from Yarmouth northward, along the shore towards Cromer aforesaid, and was not then fully master of the reason of these things, I was surprised to see, in all the way from Winterton, that the farmers and country people had scarce a barn, or a shed, or a stable, nay, not the pales of their yards and gardens, not a hogskin, not a necessary house, but what was built of old planks, beams, wales, and timbers, etc. The wrecks of ships, and ruins of mariners' and merchants' fortunes, and in some places were whole yards filled and piled up very high with the same stuff laid up, as I supposed to sell for the like building purposes, as there should be occasion. About the year 1692, I think it was that year, there was a melancholy example of what I have said of this place. A fleet of 200 sail of light colliers, so they call the ships bound northward empty to fetch coals from Newcastle to London, went out of Yarmouth Roads with a fair wind, to pursue their voyage, and were taken short with a storm of wind at northeast, after they were past Winterthanness, a few leagues. Some of them, whose masters were a little more wary than the rest, or perhaps, who made a better judgment of things, or who were not so far out as the rest, tacked, and put back in time, and got safe into the roads, but the rest pushing on in hopes to keep out to sea, and weather it, were by the violence of the storm driven back, when they were too far embayed to weather Winterthanness as above, and so were forced to run west, everyone shifting for themselves as well as they could. Some run away for Lynn Deeps, but few of them, the night being so dark, could find their way in there. Some, but very few, rode it out at a distance. The rest, being above 140 sail, were all driven on shore and dashed to pieces, and very few of the people on board were. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.